Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Simon Marks is LBC's Washington correspondent, and he joins us on the line now. Hello, Simon.
Good evening, Nick. I hope I'm going to stay on the line. We're in the middle of a massive thunderstorm here, and the lights keep flickering. So if I disappear, your glamorous assistant is aware. We're going to do it on the phone. But for now, we'll keep going.
Well, how exciting. Don't put up an umbrella.
Exactly. What a welcome, though, for European leaders arriving to deal with the sort of a King Lear-style storm as they prepare to deal with Donald Trump raging at the White House.
Well, is it possible that they might not be able to land in Washington? They might be diverted somewhere else.
I mean, they certainly can't land under these circumstances, although it's supposed to pack up in about half an hour. So I'm not even sure when they're all getting here, given the haste with which they have decided to come.
Yes. So what are the prospects for tomorrow then?
Well, I mean, it's going to be a massive showdown. Friday night, it was clear to everyone, including figures within the Trump administration, that the summit with Vladimir Putin had been a disaster, had, as everybody suspected it might, blown up entirely in his face, and that Vladimir Putin had played him like a violin. And you and I talked about it on the program on Friday night. Saturday, Donald Trump goes and plays golf with his special envoy, Steve Witkoff, his former real estate buddy from New York, who suddenly has become the central figure in negotiations with Vladimir Putin, even though he doesn't speak a word of Russian, knows nothing of the Kremlin's labyrinthine inner circle, and still apparently can't sort the Ukrainian map out entirely in his own mind. And by the time the golf round was over, suddenly Donald Trump was adhering himself to Vladimir Putin with superglue, adopting all of Putin's talking points regarding the war in Ukraine, saying that he's no longer interested in trying to negotiate a ceasefire. And remember, last week he was saying that if he came out of the summit without a ceasefire, there would be very severe consequences for the Russian leader. All of that has simply evaporated. He's only interested in negotiating a full long-term end to the war, full peace. And, by the way, he thinks that Ukraine absolutely should cede the whole of the Donbass, the whole of eastern Ukraine, to Vladimir Putin in exchange for that peace, even though, of course, for the Ukrainians and their European allies, it's a non-starter. So the Prime Minister, Emmanuel Macron, Friedrich Merz, Giorgia Meloni from Italy, Alexander Stubb from Finland, the NATO Secretary General, Ursula von der Leyen, they're all heading here for what I think are absolutely going to be crisis talks with the Trump administration. Because remember, last Wednesday, they thought they'd struck a deal with Donald Trump, that he was on board to enforce a five-point negotiating plan with Putin that would prioritize protecting Ukrainian security. And they've flown here basically to protect Zelensky from coming in for another Oval Office mugging and being told on Monday, give up the Donbass, or we're going to pull all assistance from Kiev. So, you know, I don't think it's overstating it to say it's the most consequential meeting for the transatlantic alliance in modern history. You know, this is the alliance that has kept the peace in Europe for eight decades. And now, basically, every major European leader is having to fly here at a moment's notice to try and drag Donald Trump out of Vladimir Putin's embrace.
Yeah, and Trump said that Ukraine should accept whatever it was that Putin wanted because Russia is a big country and they aren't.
Yeah, I mean, yes, absolutely. I mean, that's pretty much where we are. And Donald Trump was clearly beguiled by Vladimir Putin's talk of turning the page in the bilateral economic relationship between the United States and Russia. Trump wants to get American businesses back into Russia. And, you know, the whole concept of Donald Trump, you know, this man who wants to take possession of Greenland and, you know, has talked about Canada becoming America's 51st state. state and Gaza becoming American territory. I think he quite likes the idea of carving the world up with Putin. But he'd promised the Europeans, at least this is what the Europeans say, last Wednesday, that he understood where they were all coming from and he wasn't going to sell Ukraine down the river. And then on board Air Force One on his way to Alaska on Friday morning, he suddenly started saying, I'm not asking for a ceasefire because of Europe. The Europeans don't tell me what to do. And that was the first moment on Friday when you started thinking, this whole thing's going to go off the rails because he's not going to honour the agreement that he struck with the Europeans. And this, what we've seen over the weekend is an extraordinary act of treachery by the American president as he has moved ever closer to Vladimir Putin's positions.
Yeah. Why? I mean, I know that this is a question that you can't answer, but the look, the difference between Trump's demeanor going in, which was all cheesy grins and thumbs up and, you know, doing his usual thing, into the chit-chat that he had with Putin, and on coming out, he looked a totally deflated balloon.
Absolutely.
It's as though the
Absolutely.
Life had been taken out of him. It's as though Putin had burnt his money in front of him.
Yeah, absolutely. And other figures within the Trump administration, I mean, one of the White House correspondents, Peter Alexander with NBC News, was describing the entourage surrounding Donald Trump as coming into that joint press appearance with Putin looking absolutely ashen at the end of the summit.
It wasn't just people from the fake news. It was Fox News who were saying that.
Correct. They said that's right. Jackie Heinrich from Fox News said exactly the same thing. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the reason why he's changed his mind is multifaceted. I mean, he doesn't do defeat Donald Trump, does he? So the idea that everybody was saying this had failed didn't sit well with him, and he had to find a way of projecting it as a success. I also think he's absolutely desperate to resolve Ukraine quickly. He doesn't begin to understand the complexities that are entailed in the kind of territorial negotiation that will have to take place if there is going to be a lasting peace. Certainly not the complexities of the kind of mugging that Vladimir Putin wants to carry out towards Ukraine, the dismemberment of Ukraine, and all of this talk about security guarantees, which of course are at the heart of any peace negotiation. Witkoff himself doesn't have any idea what he's talking about. Take a listen to this. It's 15 seconds of Steve Witkoff this morning on CNN claiming that, in fact, there has been a breakthrough with Vladimir Putin arising out of that Alaska summit.
We got to an agreement that the United States and other European nations could effectively offer Article 5-like language to cover a security guarantee.
They could effectively offer Article 5-like language. What does that mean? No European leader has any idea what that means. Article 5 is the mutual defence covenant that sits at the heart of the NATO charter. There's no suggestion, and he acknowledged, that NATO is going to be providing these security guarantees. No, they're going to have to be provided by a coalition of nations, the United States, along with some NATO and some non-NATO countries. And so this notion that they've agreed Article 5-like language has left every European corridor of power scratching their heads and saying, what on earth is he talking about? And he's just not articulate at all in the language of any of this stuff, and apparently had circles run round him by Putin in the Kremlin 10 days ago when the talk turned to maps and he didn't recognise half of the territories that Vladimir Putin was talking to him about.
He's a billionaire. It's absolutely remarkable how ineffectual you can be as a person and still make that much money.
This is so complicated, this stuff. And it if you're going to do this properly, you've got to surround yourself with people that have been steeped in Russia-Ukrainian relations, you know, for the last 20 years, who can literally look at a map and say, yeah, well, that's never going to work because this, 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 and this, you've got to do it that way. They haven't got anyone in this administration like that. Absolutely no one. And while Rubio was sitting on CNN today saying it's a breakthrough, you know, we can get this thing negotiated on Monday, and Trump looks like a man who thinks that what's going to play out here on Monday is the negotiation about the future of Ukraine. He thinks it's going to be, you know, one day and it'll be done. Marco Rubio was being sort of the closest thing to an adult in the room and telling another television network here today, actually, we're nowhere close to getting this thing finalized. I mean, he knows how complicated it's going to be. He just doesn't personally have the experience in the region that he needs. And there's no one in that inner circle that does.
Yeah, Marco Rubio was sort of pushing back at his interviewer. I think it was on one of the major news channels, saying, imagine hating Donald Trump so much that you want all this to fail. Well, imagine being a person who called Donald Trump a basket case and then debasing yourself to the extent that you would work for him.
And a person who said, you're never, ever going to be able to strike a deal with a guy like Putin. That was Marco Rubio's position just 3 years ago. Now, suddenly, promoting a deal with a guy like Putin.
Yeah. Now, let's talk briefly about Gavin Newsom, because he is doing some excellent work, is he not?
He's doing some interesting work. He's doing a couple of things. First of all, he is, and let's remember that Gavin Newsom is the governor of California, Democrat, with almost certainly presidential aspirations for 2028. He is threatening to engage in redistricting. That's the redrawing of constituency boundaries in California to redress any imbalance that results from the redistricting that the Republicans are absolutely trying to do down in Texas. We talked about this last week. The Republicans are basically trying to concoct 5 additional seats in the House of Representatives for their side by pushing a whole bunch of mostly black and mostly Latino voters out of 5 congressional districts so that they then automatically become Republican wins in the midterm elections next year. So Gavin Newsom is basically saying, I'll tell you what, guys, I'm going to redistrict California to create more seats for the Democrats. But if you put your weapons down in Texas, or any other state that's thinking of redistricting for the Republicans, I'll put my weapons down here in California. So it's this fascinating standoff.
Yes.
While Gavin Newsom also takes to social media and impersonates Donald Trump on his social media account, which is attracting a lot of attention.
It really is. I mean, it's worth looking at because it's so funny. And it's funny because it really does highlight what an infantile man Donald Trump is with his all caps and exclamation mark tweets or whatever truths he calls them, doesn't he? Truths.
Well, you know what the only way to end this conversation is?
Go on.
By saying, thank you for your attention to this matter.
To this matter, We appreciate your attention. Thank you, Simon.
Cheers, Nick.
That's Simon Marks, LBC's Washington correspondent.